Welcome to the Be Freed podcast, where we distill the world's best sources into personalized insights you can actually finish. I'm Naya, and today we're exploring the fascinating world of psychoanalysis, not as dusty theory, but as practical tools for understanding yourself.
I'm Jackson, and I'm thrilled to dive into this with you. We're answering a question many of us have. How can psychoanalytic concepts actually help us understand our everyday behaviors, reactions, and relationships? Those moments when you think, why do I keep doing that?
Exactly. And we're drawing from incredible sources, like Dr. Paul Conte's appearances on Huberman Lab, research from attachment pioneers, and practical books that make these concepts accessible. Let's unpack the invisible patterns steering our lives. So, Jackson, I've always been fascinated by this idea that most of what drives us isn't fully conscious. It's like we're only aware of a tiny fraction of what's actually happening in our minds.
Right. Dr. Paul Conte uses this perfect iceberg metaphor on Huberman Lab to explain it. The tip above water is your conscious awareness, but the massive part below, that's your unconscious, silently influencing everything from your relationship choices to how you react to criticism.
I remember listening to that series and thinking, this explains so much. Like, when I get irrationally annoyed at someone who reminds me of my critical aunt, even though they're just asking a simple question.
That's exactly it. And what I love about Stephen Gross's book, The Examined Life, is how he shows this through real stories. There's one about a man who kept sabotaging job interviews, and it turned out he was unconsciously recreating a childhood dynamic with his father.
So our unconscious is constantly predicting and protecting, sometimes helping us, sometimes holding us back. But how do we actually access this hidden part?
That's where the practical tools come in. One simple way is to notice patterns. If you keep having the same argument with different people or feeling the same emotion in seemingly unrelated situations, that's your unconscious waving a flag. Let's talk about defense mechanisms. These automatic ways our mind protects us from emotional pain.
Oh, I'm guilty of rationalization all the time. Like when I convince myself I didn't really want that promotion anyway after not getting it. But aren't some defenses actually helpful?
Absolutely. Joseph Burgo's book, Why Do I Do That? Explains this beautifully. Some defenses like humor or anticipation are actually quite mature and flexible. It's when we overuse things like denial or projection that we get stuck.
I noticed myself doing this yesterday. My partner made a simple suggestion about dinner, and I immediately felt criticized and got defensive. After a minute, I realized I was projecting my own perfectionism onto him.
That awareness is huge. Dr. Conte talks about this as the first step, just noticing the defense. He suggests asking, is this behavior moving me toward or away from who I want to be? That tiny pause gives you back choice.
So the trick isn't eliminating defenses, but recognizing when they're happening and having more options?
Exactly. Think of mature defenses as seatbelts. They protect you while still letting you move forward. Immature defenses are more like slamming on the brakes whenever you feel threatened.
Naya read in a relatable, casual, empathetic voice, like a best friend who just gets you.
Jackson, I've been hearing a lot about attachment styles lately. It seems like everyone on social media is talking about being anxiously attached or avoidant. Is this actually legitimate psychology?
It absolutely is. Attachment theory started with John Bowlby and Mary Ainsworth's research on infants, but later expanded to adults. It's one of the most well-researched areas in psychology, showing how our early relationships create templates for later ones.
That makes sense. I notice I get really anxious when someone doesn't text back quickly, which is probably connected to how my mom was inconsistently available when I was growing up.
Right. And what's hopeful about this research is the concept of earned secure attachment that David Wallen talks about in his book. Even if your early experiences weren't ideal, you can develop more secure patterns through later ones.
How would someone actually do that? It seems hard to change something so ingrained.
It's about small, consistent actions. If you tend to be avoidant, you might practice one vulnerable share daily. If you're anxiously attached, you might practice self-soothing before reaching out. Dr. Amir Levine discussed this on Huberman Lab. He calls it the dependency paradox. Allowing healthy dependence actually fosters independence.
That's so counterintuitive, but makes perfect sense. Another fascinating concept is transference, like a best friend who just gets you.
Wait, I thought that only happened in therapy, like when patients start seeing their therapist as a parent figure?
That's where it was first observed, but researchers like Susan Anderson showed it happens everywhere. If your new boss reminds you of your critical father, you might read their neutral emails as disapproving, even when they're not.
Oh, wow. This explains so much about my dating life. I keep being attracted to emotionally unavailable people who remind me of my first boyfriend.
Exactly. And the research shows we actually misremember traits and transfer emotions based on these templates. The good news is, once you're aware of your patterns, you can interrupt them.
So what's a practical way to catch this happening?
Try what I call a transference check. When you have a big reaction to something small, ask yourself, who am I really with right now? Who from my past does this remind me of? Just that question often reduces the emotional charge.
Let's talk about dreams. I've always been fascinated by them, but wasn't sure if there's any science behind interpretation or if it's all just random brain activity.
It's actually both. Jung's Man and His Symbols presents dreams as messages from your unconscious in symbolic language. But neuroscientist Mark Solms added important evidence showing dreaming isn't just a side effect of REM sleep. It involves four brain systems related to emotion and motivation.
So dreams might actually be meaningful? Last night, I dreamed about being lost in my childhood home, but all the rooms had changed.
That's a perfect example. From Jung's perspective, houses often symbolize the self. So changes in your childhood home might reflect how you're revisiting and revising your understanding of your past.
That's wild, because I've been thinking a lot about how my childhood shaped me. What's a simple way to work with dreams?
Try keeping a one-line dream journal. Don't analyze it first, just collect. After a month, look for recurring images or themes. Whether you interpret them symbolically or see them as emotional processing, you're training yourself to notice your inner world. Naya read in a relatable, casual, empathetic voice, like a best friend who just gets you.
Really? How so?
Research on the brain's default mode network shows that when our attention drifts inward, this network activates. It's involved in autobiographical memory, future planning, and understanding others' perspectives, all crucial for self-understanding.
So daydreaming isn't just wasting time? That's validating.
Not at all. Studies by Smallwood and Schooler show mind wandering has both costs and benefits. The key is giving it structured time rather than having it hijack your focus during important tasks.
What would that structured time look like?
Try a 2-minute unfocused scan. Set a timer, close your eyes, and silently narrate whatever thoughts arise. When you hear judgments like, "This is dumb," just label them gently and keep going. You're building a bridge between free-floating thought and reflective awareness, exactly where self-understanding happens.
These concepts are so helpful, but what about when someone has experienced serious trauma? Does psychoanalysis have anything to offer there?
Absolutely. Bessel van der Kolk's The Body Keeps the Score revolutionized trauma treatment by showing how trauma lives in both mind and body. Dr. Conti builds on this in his book, Trauma, the Invisible Epidemic, creating a practical roadmap. Define trauma precisely, look directly at it rather than suppressing it, and cultivate safety, agency, and social repair.
I've noticed people often avoid talking about painful experiences, thinking that's the way to move on.
That's a common misconception. Dr. Conti explains on Huberman Lab that while short-term coping through distraction has its place, long-term healing requires looking directly at the painful thing, with support and skill, so the past stops controlling the present.
And shame often keeps trauma locked in place, right? I remember Brené Brown's TED Talk about vulnerability being essential for change.
Exactly. Brown's research shows that naming feelings accurately and practicing vulnerability in safe contexts is how we build shame resilience. As she says, vulnerability is the birthplace of innovation, creativity, and change. That's not just a nice quote, it's a prescription for how healing happens.
Naya, this has been fascinating, Jackson. Let's wrap up with some practical takeaways. How can people actually use these concepts in daily life?
I love that question. Here are my top three. First, practice the defense detector. When you notice yourself explaining away feedback or catastrophizing, simply label it. I'm intellectualizing right now, or that's my projection. That tiny pause gives you choice.
Second, try the attachment experiment. Pick one secure behavior to practice daily, like directly stating a need instead of hinting, or self-soothing before sending that anxious text. Research shows these small actions literally rewire your expectations over time.
And third, use the transference check we discussed. When something triggers a strong reaction, ask, "Who am I really seeing here?" This simple question can transform conflicts at work and home.
I'm definitely trying these, and I love how psychoanalysis gives us language for experiences we all have but couldn't quite name.
That's its enduring power. These concepts have stood the test of time because they capture something real about human experience, and modern research keeps refining and validating them.
That's your daily dose of Smarter from BeFreed podcast. If your brain liked it, come back tomorrow. We've got more where that came from. I'm Naya.
And I'm Jackson. Until next time, keep exploring that fascinating mind of yours.